At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. The Packers opened up as a 13.5-point favorite to the Carolina Panthers, but they suffer a 16-13 defeat here at Lambeau Field. And, you know, just an interesting team once again. You know, they had some momentum and were feeling good after a good second half and a victory in Pittsburgh. And you get to this game and the offense couldn't sustain drives. Well, they couldn't capitalize on drives with touchdowns, and the defense had some issues in the run as well. So I guess I'll get both of you guys' reaction, and, you know, Ryan, you can start it off.
You know, it's my 12th season covering this team, and there's been a lot of years where you kind of just knew exactly what to expect. The Packers are going to win 12 games, bow out in the playoffs. It was almost like rinse and repeat, right? I have no idea what to make of this team. I have no clue. It could go extreme one way, extreme the other. I have no idea. I do believe the only thing that long-term matters this week is Tucker Kraft's injury. I don't think it's losing to the Panthers because, you know, they could beat the Eagles next week. They could win in Detroit. I'm not saying they will, but they can. And then you move on past this loss. It's not still having the best record in the NFC North because there's a lot of season left to play. That long-term, those things don't matter. Tucker Kraft, obviously in Rapport, NFL Network, reporting that it's a torn ACL. We'll see.
It's suspected.
Yeah. Suspected torn ACL. If that's the case, that matters. That is a big deal. As Rashawn Gary said in the locker room after the game, what goes through your mind? You see that injury. He said a big F-bomb. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's certainly not speaking alone. This locker room knows what he means. In the locker room, he's a captain. And also what he means to the offense on the field. That is what matters this week.
Spoon, just takeaways from the performance.
I thought it was kind of endemic of what we've seen all year, which is that they either can't capitalize on the success that they have, they can't build off the success they have, or they don't they don't have, like, the chemistry of a winning team. They have a chemistry of some good players who are playing together and not really playing like a really emerging team. And we see it every week. You know, I don't know. Well, we can get into more about Tucker Kraft. I don't think that has to be a season-sinking injury. I think it doesn't count them out, you know? I mean, there's ways to overcome this kind of thing, but they're not in that mold of the kind of team that can overcome that stuff. They just aren't there yet, and I don't know if they ever will be.
That's what stands out to me because I look at the Panthers going into this matchup. It was a makeshift offensive line. They already had a center that was out. They had guards. Like, I feel like everyone dropped from the offensive line for the Panthers going into this game. It was the seventh different rotation on the O-line going into this matchup. But you wouldn't have believed it the way that they performed.
And they lost guys along the way, too.
Exactly. So that's why it's kind of hard to look at the Packers like, oh, okay, you lost Christian Watson for a series because of a concussion protocol or Tucker Kraft or Aaron Banks went down. Right. These teams have to figure out, and the good teams find a way to make it happen. Like Detroit last year, they had all the injuries on defense. They still found a way to make a playoff run. And that's going to be the question that I have for this team moving forward, Ryan. We talked about it before we started the pod. Can this team in the playoffs, you need four games. You have to have four wins. Wild card, divisional, NFC championship game, and the Super Bowl. Who knows if this team is capable of doing that? And obviously it's November, but there's a lot of those mistakes and some of that sloppy play that I would say you can throw out a red flag with the penalties and just not being able to score points when, especially when the defense forcing three and outs or you get the Xavier McKinney interception. So that's really my biggest thing just with this offense. And you can kind of tie it into Tucker Kraft as well, Ryan. But, you know, what did you make of just the play from the offense?
Not good enough. You know what the Panthers did? They gave the ball to their best player 25 times on the ground, right? Rico Dowdle had 25 carries, 130 yards. It's the first time this season the Packers rush defense has given up a 100-yard rusher. Although it is interesting that in the three games they have not won has been their three hardest days against running backs this season. We're talking Quinshon Judkins in Cleveland with 94 yards. We're talking Javonte Williams in Dallas with over 80 yards. The five games that they have won, they've given up nothing on the ground. So the Panthers gave it 25 times to their best player. They just rode him relentlessly. The Packers now cannot do that. But I still thought it was interesting that Tucker Kraft only had two targets on the day when he did go down. It wasn't like the last couple weeks. To Spoon's point, they can survive this. Maybe it helps that they are so egalitarian in the passing game that they're not overly reliant on one player, so that if even a Tucker Kraft goes out, you might be able to survive that. Now, they're going to have to do that because this is a seismic loss. I mean, he was – if you had to rank guys that you don't want to lose on this offense, you start with Jordan Love, and this season number two is Tucker Kraft. Like, that's the second guy. So, with that said, as the NFL world turns, you know, life is a circle. It was 2 years ago, 2023, when they're both rookies, that Luke Musgrave was ahead of Tucker Kraft. And it was a Luke Musgrave injury, a lacerated kidney, that gave Tucker Kraft a shot. And Tucker Kraft ran with that shot, the way that he runs with the ball. He's become an NFL star, one of the best tight ends in the league. Luke Musgrave has become an afterthought. And you saw in that game-tying drive late, three catches for Luke Musgrave. Now he gets an opportunity because of the Tucker Kraft injury. And we'll see what he does with that because he does have a lot of talent. He was a second-round pick in a loaded tight end draft class for a reason. The Packers very much believe in his field-stretching speed. He also has to show it because talent alone doesn't do it. But he is going to get an opportunity.
Spoon, as far as the offense, I mean, seven possessions, one touchdown, turnover on downs, two turnovers, two field goals, a missed field goal. You know, what do you make from the offensive performance?
Well, there's a lot of things going on, and I think there's just some inconsistencies with the offensive line. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of instances where I still see guys kind of looking at each other like, wasn't that your guy or is that my guy? And, you know, we saw a couple times when blitzers didn't get picked up by, you know, running backs. Mm-hmm. We saw... And they're not—they're a blitzing team. You know, it's not like the Panthers, you know, excel or major in blitzing. And the thing that—and LaFleur made reference to this—but the thing that was most surprising was they just came off playing a game against the exact same type of a defense, where you know you have to be patient. You have to take what they give you, and you can't get greedy. And Jordan Love got greedy a couple of times, and so did LaFleur. You know, there's no reason why you go for it on fourth and eight at the 13 when you can kick a field goal, and then you've got a chance. You know, you score that touchdown, you're up by three, and you're in control. And it was, you know, when your offense isn't, you're playing against a team that's just taking everything away in the end zone, especially in the red zone. That just boggles my mind. And so if you're not going to be disciplined enough to kick the field goal, how can you ask your players to be disciplined enough to, you know, not commit penalties, not overreach, not take too many chances? I thought they just did not play a smart game offensively. Yeah. And that comes back to LaFleur. And then... You know, I don't know why they couldn't run the ball. I mean, Jacobs had decent numbers, but there were times when on first down they couldn't get what they needed or on second down. And I just feel like they're getting outgamed up front. Yeah. And they got to look into that, I think.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of? I'm going to use an analogy here. Have either of you ever ran against a stiff headwind? Stiff headwind. Like, it's blowing in your face. Mm-hmm. You're running couple miles, right?
I've ridden a bike in a stiff.
There you go.
Yeah, we learned last week he's not the runner.
You're checking your pace, and you feel like you're working your butt off, but it's just not where you feel like it should be. So what do? You push harder. You strain yourself, and then you wear yourself out of desperation. This offense, it's checking its pace. Oh, gosh, only 6 points? Really? We got way more talent than that. We should have more than 6 points. Okay, let's make up for it. Let's strain. Let's push. And then you get desperate. Then you throw down the middle of the field into triple coverage. Or you go for it on 4th and 8 when you have nothing drawn up and you throw a punt into the end zone that shouldn't have been picked. You're straining. You're playing out of desperation instead of what you should do, which is find that relaxing pace, that zone, and just keep plowing forward. Instead of straining. Like, that's what it reminded me of today.
And it's so ironic because coaches love to say, next play, next play. Just get it in the next play. Regroup, next play. So why press? Why force things when it's not there? Just go stick to what works and just let the game take care of itself. And like I said, I don't know if it's because of those first couple of series. Like, you have the Savion Williams fumble where he's running into Dobbs. And, like, they just weren't able to get points in that first half. So –
everyone wants to kill Matt LaFleur for that play call, by the way. Savion Williams scored a touchdown on that play call last week in Pittsburgh. Like, sometimes it's just a rookie makes a rookie mistake, and he doesn't run with his head up, use his eyes to see where he's going, and he runs right through the middle of the 8-7 blocking for him, right? Like, that's – it's not always about the play call.
I will say, though, that when they get inside the red zone, Josh Jacobs has to be their guy.
Yeah, lay the screens along.
I would run him, you know, 3-4, or at least get the ball in his hands somehow, because he's so good in the red zone. And, you know, there's some guys you give the ball to and everybody knows it's coming and you can still do things with them. I mean, yeah, you have to change it up a little bit and call different running plays, but, you know, sometimes I think they kind of outthink themselves a little bit. I agree. It wasn't a terrible call. They did score on that, something somewhat similar. But, you know, it was – I don't know. I don't know why that play was run so poorly.
The third and four in the red zone in the second half, I thought that was a much – that's Josh Jacobs' territory. Like, there you just got it. You got to hammer Jacobs with it. I think it'll be interesting. You know, you want to talk about – where does this offense regroup and need to start building its new identity sans Tucker Kraft? Like, it has to start with Josh Jacobs. 100%. They have got to figure out to do what they have not done this season, what they did last season, which is have that power run game be their identity. It was all through 2024. Where would that Packers offense last year have been without Josh Jacobs, that run game? It would have been absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
And so it's there. You have to find it again. Like, that's got to be what the foundation now going forward. And then, okay, you got all these playmakers around Jordan Love. You got a quarterback that's playing at a pretty high level for the most part. You can build off that, but that's got to be the foundation, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. I mean,
no question.
It does. I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, you can't have some judiciousness with him. But to me, inside the 20 is where he excels. Oh, yeah. He's just got that nose for the end zone. And, I mean, sort of like what Emmitt Smith was. As soon as they got near, you know, the goal line, he was going to get the ball. And I don't know. You'd wonder what their hesitation is there. Now, maybe they don't have confidence in their offensive line.
The calf?
I don't know why.
The calf? I'm curious how the calf is.
I thought he looked fine.
I did, too.
There was no indication that he was –
I said he made cuts. Yeah. He broke some good runs as well.
He looked better with the calf today than the last 2 weeks, I thought. Certainly better than last week. He had that one touchdown run in Pittsburgh, but other than that, I thought he looked slowed by the calf last week.
Last week because I didn't think he had many holes. It was kind of hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But today, I mean, he got out. There's still a couple times when, yeah, you're right. There was one in Pittsburgh where he got tackled. I didn't think he should get tackled. Normally he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And today there were a couple where I didn't think he normally would get tackled. But it's good enough. I mean, he's not Rico Dowdle, who's all of a sudden the best running back in the NFL.
Yeah, at least the Packers made him.
I do want to make a point about, we're not talking about defense yet, but before I forget, that, you know, their run defense was good by numbers, but it wasn't really that good. I mean, it really wasn't. I remember, I actually told Cassidy about this. We were talking about it. I'm like, she's like, wow, number five. I'm like, don't think about that number. They're not that good. They're not that good. They just had some circumstances where, you know, they either got ahead or Arizona doesn't have any running backs. Cincinnati just, you know, they couldn't, they were going to throw the ball all game long. You know, they're just circumstances where I don't think they have a good run defense, and I think that showed today.
It's so ironic you say that, because Pete was, our Pete Doherty was telling me the stat. Yeah, you know, the number, the stat looks good of how high they are in run defense, but they're, in terms of the opposing offense, like the least amount of times, like, that the Packers, like, have runs on them. I kind of if that makes sense. Like, the way, like, teams just don't run the ball on them a whole lot.
Well, their first five games of the season, they had a double-digit lead before giving up a point.
Yeah.
You want to take care of the run game. You want to get the run game out of the game.
Right.
That's how you do it. Exactly. And they did that for the first five games of the season. Exactly. To your point, like, that was the recipe. And that takes care of the run game.
Yeah, that's so true. So, I do, we can jump in defense in just a sec. But lastly, because you did talk about the offensive line. Because that's a group still. I just don't know what to make of it. I mean, yeah, you can talk about the injuries and things of that nature, but I guess the interesting part is where we see, you know, Elgton Jenkins with holding penalties and Sean Ryan with penalties, Jordan Morgan with penalties. From a tackle perspective, like, those guys overall, Zach Tom and Rasheed Walker, they did okay. At least I didn't see any noticeable they can say missed assignments, but that's kind of, again, the big thing with this whole team of just, like, sustaining those drives and, like, finding someone to block and just creating those holes. And
I just don't see a lot of that. I think they keep making mistakes with how they're using guys. Like, they want, they so badly want Jordan Morgan to be a right guard. And it, he's a good talent, but Sean Ryan, and that, to move Sean Ryan to left guard makes no sense, because he's been playing right guard, and Morgan has played some left guard, and he's really a left tackle, so why didn't he go over there? I also am starting to think, you know, well, why aren't they using Anthony Belton at guards or someone, because of his size and his ability? Now, you know, maybe they don't trust him in pass blocking or something, but everybody seems like a little out of place or just not right. And when Aaron Banks leaves the lineup, I mean, they're pretty decent when Aaron Banks is in the game, but once he goes out, they seem like they're absolutely lost.
That is true.
I think they just don't want to move Jordan Morgan again. I'm not agreeing with that. I just seems like they don't want to move him again.
Right.
They, I don't even know that that means that they have their best five on the field. They just don't want to move him again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm with you. Like, Sean Ryan's a damn fine, capable right guard. Like, there's nothing glaringly wrong with his game. He's a low ceiling. He struggles sometimes in pass protection. Not that he's not – he's the levee's not breaking with him on the field. He's just not a plus pass protector. But he's a damn fine right guard. Like, it's okay to have him at right guard unless you're just not going to move Jordan Morgan again. I think that's – That's what they give off in this.
I don't know. But I think they have – that's something they have to do, especially going into this next game against the Eagles, is figure out, you know, what their plan is on the offensive line, because it's not really working. It's not good enough. They do pass protect at times when you would see Jordan Love would had all day when he hit Romeo Doubs over that deep, you know, deep dig route. In a clutch situation, and then the next thing you know, someone leaks through, and they're looking at each other like, "Was that my guy?" Or I mean, that's how it looks.
Yeah.
So I think they got a lot of things they gotta clean up on the offensive line.
Did you get any explanation as to what happened on the two where they timed the blitz perfectly up the middle? Were there just well timed screens that like?
Well, The one to Jacobs was a middle screen, mm-hmm. and so he's not supposed to block that guy, right. and so it was just a perfect blitz. That's what Jacobs said. There was another one up the mm-hmm. middle that I think was Emmanuel Wilson's yeah. guy. He took a step to the right like he was going to pick up someone to the right, and someone came up the middle. So I have a feeling that that maybe was on him. Mm-hmm. And then one time, Morgan just got smoked at the line of scrimmage, and they had a free runner at Love. You know, Derek Brown's a really, really good player, and he caused them some problems. I don't know.
Yeah.
Their offense is just off.
It is.
It's hard to have to ensure that your best five are on the field when you're unwilling to move a guy. It just seems like they're going to have to make a decision there. Yeah. Are you willing to move a guy who's very good talent, not a very good right guard, or are you and maybe mess with his development, or you're not going to have your best five?
It's going to be the million-dollar question how they navigate that, because even then, overall depth, that's the other question. I mean, I know they just got Jacob Monk back, and I don't know if he could help in the interior at all.
Maybe they need to give him a chance. He's more of a natural guard than Jordan Morgan.
Yeah, so like I said, they're definitely going to have to figure out something. I guess last point on offense, then we can jump into defense. Just overall, what did you make of the play of Jordan Love?
It's fine other than the interception. You know, it was hell to throw today. That wind was fierce. You know, it's not like Bryce Young was getting a lot done with putting the ball in the air either. I thought if you take care of that one terrible interception, the best thing he was doing was taking care of the football on a windy day, and then he throws that interception. So that to me is you have to understand – the situation, the environment, yeah. and you have to make the right plays, which for the most part, he did okay at, but that was a terrible pick.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Tom Clements still watches the games, but he probably had a heart attack when he saw
triple coverage.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened a couple of times yeah. where he throws late down the middle, and you can't do that. You just cannot make a living doing that. And it made a difference in the game. I don't remember what down was it when he threw that.
I don't remember either. You know what I do remember, though? He got away with it in Pittsburgh, right? So if you're getting that throw to Christian Watson.
Oh, yeah.
If you're getting away with that in this league, maybe you start to think, hey, I can do this.
Yeah.
You just got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason why that's a rule.
But, yeah. But, man, you know, the weather, the situation, you know that they play with their safeties back. And I don't know how he didn't see the other safety coming over, too. So it was just a bad play. He's going to make bad plays. You know, he made some really good throws. The throw to Watson deep was a really good ball. Mm-hmm. It hung up there forever, but that might have been the wind. You know, I even thought the throw to Dobbs in the end zone, mm-hmm. like, I thought that had a chance. I want to look at that really closely again because it did get by the defender, and I thought Dobbs had a chance to bring it in.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of look at that. I don't think he played terrible. Mm. Just no. The one mistake.
The issue on offense when Jordan Love, the issue on offense, and we've talked about it, but the issue on offense was empty drives, was not finishing drives with points. Because Jordan Love played well enough to sustain all these long drives. They were moving the ball up and down the field. They weren't finishing drives. And the point that you made, Spoon, Josh Jacobs, he's your touchdown machine. 10 rushing touchdowns this season. He started a new streak, 5 straight games with a rushing touchdown. You've got to figure out how to finish drives. You cannot have empty possessions in this league, especially with a defense that doesn't take the ball away a whole lot. Like, you got to be able to capitalize what the defense does, which get a lot of stops, into points on offense without having those empty possessions. They're going to need their run game. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's not about Jordan Love. They're going to need their run game.
Yeah. I mean, they invested into Josh Jacobs in the run game in the offseason when they brought in Aaron Banks, when they brought in these guys drafting Anthony Belton. So they wanted to invest into this run game. So That's going to be the key. So as you had asked the question about it, yes, 1,000%. They have to find a way to get him going and playing at a consistent level. And like I said, it's all areas. Starts up front. And even then, moving forward, it's going to be a question because Tucker Kraft was a really good blocker. So that's another thing that I'm going to be curious about, like with Musgrave or is Fitzpatrick. You know, how are the tight ends going to help in the run game as well moving forward?
You know, I'm curious what you guys think about this because this has been in my head and just kind of spitballing it. One of the best things about Tucker Kraft is that he's so different in today's NFL because he's that classic inline tight end. You know, a lot of the elite playmakers at that position are move guys, right? They're big receivers. You don't have them in the trenches. They're not blockers. Tucker Kraft blocks as well as he catches. And that was...
I'm not sure I'd go that far.
Maybe not now.
He's their best blocker, but he's not a great blocker. Don't get him confused with George Kittle or anything like that. He's a good blocker. I mean, he gives it his all.
Yeah.
But he's not the best.
He is certainly their best blocker.
Yes.
I think he is a quality blocker. Yeah. Blocks as much as he catches. Yeah, I have eyes. He's had a couple of huge games. So, okay, that's too far. But he's a plus blocker. He is a much better blocker than most tight ends in the league. He's not, okay, George Kittle. He's pretty good. And he's been so important in that role because Matt LaFleur loves the tight end. He uses the tight end in a variety of ways. Blocking is very important in this offense at that position. But there's a reason why the best in this league, most of them, are move guys. You're not putting them in those type of situations because they're so important to what you're doing in the passing game. You don't want a pile to roll up on Travis Kelce's knee. You don't want a pile to roll up on Brock Bowers' knee, Sam Laporta's knee. So it's interesting to me that something that Tucker Kraft does very, very well, which cuts against the grain of his position throughout the league – in this case, and it's a fluky thing, but in this case, that backfired, right? If he's more of a move guy, he not making those blocks, you just use him as a receiver because that's what he does exceptionally well. Yards after the catch, maybe he's not in that position.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty freak injury.
It could have happened
almost anyway. It wasn't because, you know, he planted his foot and he was, you know, like he got kicked in the knee.
Was it Sean Ryan?
It was Sean Ryan, yeah. You could see it really. His bottom of his foot hit Kraft's right foot was planted in the turf, and Ryan's foot hit him right on the side of the knee, mm-hmm. and it just dropped his knee to the worst possible angle mm-hmm. it could. Like if his foot hadn't been planted in the ground, like if he had been picking it up, I'll bet it might have been an MCL at the worst.
Yeah.
But it was, just like you couldn't choreograph that if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of injury it was.
It was a freak accident and like just how it played out because I was trying to see how the play developed because I didn't know if the defender from the Panthers, he like was crawling or something.
He cut Ryan.
And Ryan tried to jump over top.
I'll have to look at it again, but I think he just got... You know, so like when a guy cut blocks you at the thighs and you just fly forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his back legs just shot up and they shot up right into Kraft's knee.
Mm-hmm. As he was pulling.
You know, I'm not sure that you're allowed to cut guys, defensive guys allowed to cut like that. I can't remember if that's outside the tackle box. Maybe that's what it is. Anyway,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. It happened. Mm-hmm. It happened and now they got to – find out what they're going to do without him.
Yeah. So now we can talk defense. It was interesting hearing Micah Parsons' comments once again.
I didn't hear it. What did he have to say?
That's what I was going to say, Ryan. Just takeaways on – because he kind of talked about just the late game stuff and he just talked about just how they had to get off the field and play better. You know, what were some of the things that you heard from him?
No, the run defense is obviously something they need to get better at. But I think what's even more concerning than that is now the three games that they haven't won. The defense did not close a game. In Cleveland, 21 seconds left, they gave up the game-winning field goal, right? They played very well in Cleveland, except for 21 seconds. In Dallas, they get off the field one time after halftime, including, okay, they held them to a field goal in overtime, but they still gave up a field goal. They wanted to stop. It's a tie game. Today, you played very well. You had one touchdown, one takeaway. That's a pretty good ratio. The idea that the pass rush was in any way, shape, or form an issue today on a day the defensive front did not get to Bryce Young is laughable, because Bryce Young, it was very clear. Mike Parsons said he had like two dropbacks. I don't know if that's the right number. Haven't verified that on film, but it's not far off. Like, they did not just drop him back. It was all quick hitting, and you sacrifice something when you do that, because Bryce Young completed 11 of 20 passes for 102 yards. And as Micah Parsons said, when you're giving up that production to a quarterback, you got to play really bad not to win that game. Like, that in this league, that's what the opposing quarterback's doing, and you lose, you got to play really bad. They did not have a passing game. And the reason for that is because they respect this Packers pass rush enough that they're going to sacrifice it. Hey, we're not even going to test that pass rush. We know it's going to get home. We're just going to do our keep-away thing with the run game, move the clock, move the ball on the ground, and not have much explosive at all in the passing game. But they're not – three times now, this defense has not closed games. All three of their games that they did not win this season, they did not close the game defensively. And if you are a championship-caliber defense, you have to make a stop there. You have to make a stop in these games. No matter how well you played before that final series, you have to come up with the play. Instead, it's 2nd and 10 near midfield, 46 seconds left. Micah Parsons said that they were expecting a pass in that situation. Yeah. The Carolina Panthers knew that they couldn't throw the football into field goal range. It's too windy. Bryce Young's got no time. Like, they're not going to So the Packers were expecting a pass. The Panthers knew they couldn't pass. Rico Dowdle, inside zone, up the middle. And you watch the play. Sure looks like Evan Williams is kind of tracking the tight end in man-to-man coverage as he's going across, and he gets himself out of the gap, and Devontae Wyatt is pinned inside, Edgerton Cooper's pinned inside. You can drive a truck through that hole. You got to make – a championship-caliber defense makes that play. You have to make that play.
I think that was, I guess if you could say, like, a very, like, damning comment, was that they were expecting a pass, and they got just killed on a 19-yard run from Rico there.
He said twice – they made a better call.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I don't understand why in that situation you don't have everybody up at the line of scrimmage, like at least looking at a zero blitz. I mean, you don't have to, but make Bryce Young audible out of that run or do something different than he wanted to do. And I sort of get the feeling like Halfley sometimes gets too comfortable, you know, with what he's got and believes in, you know, okay, I'm not going to give up the big play, but every once in a while, you have to do something to shake the other offense up. And you know, I saw they brought up McKinney once in a while, and that helped. But I don't know if that would have made a huge difference. I'll tell you the play when they had a third down stop in the end zone, and then Keyshawn Nixon got called for pass interference. Mm-hmm. I believe they would have had to kick a field goal there, right? I think they were on about the 6 or something. Yeah. I can't remember exactly. Yeah. But again, that's how many times did that happen last week, too, and the week before that? Yeah. So, you know, they got some issues at corner. I mean, I thought they did okay. But like you said, I mean, Bryce Young wasn't exactly testing them down the field. No. So, you know, you've got these weaknesses. Again, I just don't – they've just got so many little issues that they have not resolved that I don't know. I don't know how that's going to happen.
Every single quarterback is going to do this the rest of the season. I didn't think Bryce Young could do it. Give him credit. I mean, the final passing numbers don't look good, but he was very consistent and determined to just get rid of the ball. And they're going to do this from now to the end of the season, because every offensive coordinator knows this Packers pass rush is lethal, and the cornerbacks are solid. We've seen some terrible cornerback play. That's not what this is. I mean, my goodness, 2023, right? We've seen bad cornerback play. It's not that, but they're solid. Like, they're not a threat to take away the football. They're not going to make you pay with takeaways. The safeties might, right? Xavier McKinney gets a pick today. You don't throw near Xavier McKinney. You throw anywhere else, and you just get rid of the ball. That's what every single quarterback's going to do. They have to figure out a way to not let that beat them. And you can look up and say they gave up 16 points. They gave up nothing in the passing game. That's all true. But then you have to make the play at the end. You just have to.
It's such a unique thing with this team because I've just thought about hearing some of the comments made about the offense and hear what the defense and the secondary. The coaches say weekly they have confidence in these players and these pieces on this team. But I wonder if they trust them.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what I'm like.
I don't
secondary
think
Gaffney
trusts his corners.
I don't.
You know, I think he's terrified of getting beat deep, and like that is a mantra of his to not get beat deep, and so you don't really see a lot of blitzing out of him. Yeah. And I don't know. You can argue it both ways. You can say, well, you know, we don't want to leave our corners on an island, and that's why we don't blitz, because we're not confident of them. On the other hand, every once in a while, you got to take a shot at quarterbacks and give your – that'll help your corners some. I don't know. I don't know. It's a real – it's a real dilemma. They should be doing better on defense than they are. I mean, 16 points. You know, we're going to talk
– right.
He's going to come back and, you know, next week, and he's going to say, hey, we only gave up 16 points and gave up under 300 yards or whatever they gave up.
Yeah, like Tet McMillan had 40 yards receiving.
Yeah, like, yeah. But, you know, they found – Panthers found a weakness, and that was in the run game. And that's how you couldn't get off the field. You couldn't get the ball back to your offense.
Yeah. It's not about the yardage or even the points. I thought the most enlightening thing that I heard was Matt LaFleur say – he was asked about the trap game thing. And I think this is true. I don't think that the Packers overlooked the Panthers. I think that they knew that they were more talented. I think that they knew that there was a certain way that the Panthers had to play to win this game. I think everything the Panthers did, they fully expected. Matt LaFleur said, give them credit. They played the way they needed to do to win the game, and the way that the Packers knew that the Panthers needed to play to win the game. They weren't surprised by anything. They were playing keep away with the run game. They knew they were going to be tested in the run game. They knew that Bryce Young wasn't going to test them, and they knew that they were going to play that soft two-shell and just force the Packers to consistently string plays together to score points instead of giving up the explosives, which this offense has a tendency of relying too much on. Like, they can hit you with a ton of explosive plays. What they can't do is score a touchdown on a 10-play drive. And so that is what the Panthers did. It's what the Packers knew the Panthers were going to do, and they couldn't do anything about it. That's the most troubling thing there is – you're not surprised. You just get beat knowing the one way they can beat you is what they did.
Yeah. Dictating the game. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah. On your home field, right? You haven't been at Lambeau in a while. You had the crowd behind you. You had the momentum. And you let a 500 team dictate how the game was going to be played. That's not good. Especially when you have an Eagles team with another really good running back coming in. And you have a better quarterback, you can say, and that's not a disrespect to Bryce Young, but Jalen Hurts is an experienced guy, and a good defense, it's just going to make – it could make for some issues on Monday Night Football.
You know what was bigger? You look at the first half. They gave up 7 points, and that looks like a pretty good first half, right? But the Panthers did exactly what they wanted to do because the Packers only had 3 offensive possessions.
Exactly.
That was more important to the Panthers than yardage or even points.
Keep away.
Yeah. Keep Jordan Love and that offense on the field, ball control, keep the pass rush out of the game, and just shorten the game. Like that's more important than the numbers.
Yeah, so that it was really fascinating. They celebrated just as much when there was a missed field goal or some opportunity because, like, that is a win when this offense is not capitalizing on anything. And I guess speaking of missed field goals, that's a great segue into special teams. Mm-hmm. They had the penalties. You had McManus missing kicks. Not a whole lot in the return game. I think what Savion Williams had one good return. Dobbs had maybe 6 yards in 2 punts. I don't know. Where do you start with special teams? Is it McManus in the kicking situation or just some of the mistakes?
Yeah, I mean, the McManus thing is going to be ongoing. So. Mm-hmm. He missed another field goal, and that's not good. I don't think you make the move yet. I don't think you make the move with Haversick until you have to. And then you either cut him or you keep him. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they have to yet. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to get a roster spot with Kraft, although they're going to have to add a tight end. I mean, they'll have to bring up Josh Weil or something from the practice squad, or find, maybe they'll trade for somebody. I don't know. You really don't need that spot until Jaden Reed is healthy, because mm-hmm. I don't think there's anybody else that they need it for yeah. at this point. So keep rolling with it, and if it becomes an every week thing, then you got to make that decision. Do you want to go with him, or do you want to go with McManus? And, you know, you keep getting to see have a second practice.
Yeah.
So at some point, you make that decision.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that field goal killed him. That field missed mm-hmm. field goal really hurt. That wasn't a very long field goal.
Mm-hmm. See, when you said make the move, in my head, I was thinking, I was expecting you to say to Haversick.
Oh,
well, because that's yeah. what people are going to wonder now, right?
Yeah, of course.
When do you, when do you make that move? I mean, how bad does it have to get for Brandon McManus until there's another kicker?
Great question.
I think you'll know. I don't think there's a
like a moment or
you know, number on it. But I think, you know, if there's a game-winning kick or something and he doesn't hit it, or, you know, I mean, his kickoffs still seem to be pretty good. His leg's still strong enough. I don't know. I think you just know. I think at some point you know based on how Haversick is kicking in practice, or whether he's really consistent or not.
Mm-hmm.
We know he's got a really strong leg. And that's becoming really important in the NFL. Teams are going, what, someone kicked a 68-yarder.
Sure did.
So, but you still have time, unless you're getting offers on him, which I kind of don't think they are. I don't know if they are for sure. But, you know, if they're just getting a seventh-round offer for him, I would hang on for a little while.
Yeah. I have a hard time imagining the world in which Lucas Haversick is not on the Packers roster in a week. I was asked today, well, what if they get offered a third-round pick for him? I have a hard time imagining a world that a third-round pick is offered for any kicker.
Yeah.
That's just not happening. That's Lulu land. Like, yeah. That's not happening.
Yeah.
So the reason it's so hard for us to know, because we are not watching the kicks in practice. Mm-hmm. The team has so much more information on that than we do yeah. or can have. So we don't know. But so long as Lucas Haversick is on the roster, which I fully expect him to continue to be on the roster, because why would you? If you have a kicker that's struggling, you have a guy that was perfect, made a 61-yarder, there's no reason to get rid of him. It's going to be a question so long as there's two kickers here. That's just going to persist. And I think that's going to persist, because I don't think he's going anywhere. One point on it's crazy how the world works, right? I want to stress the word little. I was only a little surprised when it was Ben Sims that got released for Lucas Haversick, or for Christian Watson to be activated and Lucas Haversick stayed. It wasn't a shock, because at that point we're looking at, and we mentioned it last week, we're looking at Packers tight ends position pretty covered, right? They got Tucker Kraft. They've got Luke Musgrave. It's pretty covered. But boy, you have two tight ends now. And you had to know, making that release, that the chances of Ben Sims getting picked up were very real, right? Obviously, he gets claimed by the Minnesota Vikings. How much would they like to have Ben Sims now? And Ben Sims is not a season saver. You can't replicate what Tucker Kraft's doing. It's just bodies. Having a capable, talented, because he's a talented guy. There's a reason why he was in demand. A capable, talented body at that position to at least have three guys like that. The two tight ends, that's rough.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to add another tight end. They will add another tight end.
Yeah,
and you know, Weil is a big, strong guy that probably can help him more in the run game than Ben Sims could. But we'll see. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
They do have to add somebody, though.
Yeah, no question about it. But it is – but the kicker situation with Haversick and McManus, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out for sure. But even with McManus, you know, I talked with him after the game, and he said he's played like, mm-hmm. I won't say it on this podcast, but it starts with the letter S.
Mm-hmm. Rhymes with ship.
It does. It rhymes with ship. And he said he's played like ship. And it's really just kind of...
He didn't say that, though.
He did not say ship. He did not.
And he's not wrong, either.
He's not. I assume a lot of kids listen to this podcast, so I'll avoid saying that word. But he did, and he said, like, this was the first, like, real injury of his career. He's trying to get back into a rhythm. He did say this was the first week where he kicked twice in practice this week, had a normal pregame routine. So even he's just kind of frustrated and trying to figure it out, and... Part of it does get magnified because missing the two in Pittsburgh, but every kicker outside of what Boswell struggles kicking in Pittsburgh, which is always kind of ironic, and then you just throw him in a bad situation with a 57-yarder. But this one was weird.
Well, terrible like win today.
Yeah.
I made the point in the quick game story on PackersNews.com, like, there are legitimate reasons here. Pittsburgh's the toughest place to kick in the NFL. Today the win was... ferocious. Yeah. I mean, but at the end of the day, you have one job. You gotta make kicks.
Yeah. And it is funny, though, to hear people talk about getting rid of McManus. I mean, this offseason, they signed him to a 3-year, $15 million contract with a $5 million signing bonus. You're not just gonna say, never mind. We'll see you, McManus. But he's still a veteran guy. He's kicked in a Super Bowl. Again, and it's kind of just recency bias. Like, Haversack made 10 kicks. Perfect 61-yarder. McManus comes back and he's missed three, but again, just you kind of have to let it play out just a little bit. So any final thoughts, words that I didn't ask, or anything you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, just when I was doing my story, I was thinking back to 2010 when they won the Super Bowl, and they lost. I went back because I wanted to remember who all the guys that they lost that season, all the starters that they lost. They lost JerMichael Finley, who was their stud, tight end, up-and-coming star. They lost him after, I think, 5 games, and he was done for the year. Ryan Grant, their starting running back, they lost in game 1. Nick Barnett, their starting inside linebacker, they lost him after game 4. Brad Jones, one of their other outside linebackers, they lost in week 4. I'm forgetting some others. There were like about 5 or 6 guys that were all starters that they lost. And they still managed to win the Super Bowl. And the reason they won the Super Bowl, you know, Rodgers, of course, was starting to come into his own, but he didn't really hit it until the playoffs. That's when he really took off. But they just had this chemistry of guys who came in, did their jobs, their coaching was really good, they knew who they were, they played really well in tight games. And, you know, by the end of the season, they were just a really solid, solid football team. And they didn't make a lot of dumb mistakes. They didn't have a lot of penalties, things like that. And the Packers can still do that, you know, this year. But this is going to require, you know, LaFleur doing his best coaching job and his other assistants doing their best coaching job and figuring out, putting guys in the right places. Gutekunst's going to have to add a few pieces maybe. But it's a real test of what kind of a coach you are when you can have those kind of injuries. And like you said, we saw Detroit. I mean, they made a run as far as they could go with nobody left. And they're like that now. They were really hurting on defense again. So that's what I want to see. I mean, that it just reminded me that it can be done, but I don't know if it can be done again. Here, we'll see.
The Packers have enough talent around Jordan Love that if Jordan Love plays at a top 5 quarterback level, they can survive Tucker Kraft's injury. Like, it's not like they are a dearth of talent around him without Tucker Kraft. And to the point we made earlier, the targets, it's not like he's getting 10 targets every week, and he had 19 the 2 weeks before this, and they were starting to get there. That would have been interesting to see. But it's not like it was a consistent thing. So I'll be curious about that. Where my head is leaving this game is I just have no clue what to expect from this team right now. I think, you know, we have the closest view of it that from the outside that you can get. And for me, it's pretty rare that they just leave me in this dumbfounded state where I don't know what to expect from week to week. Like, I'm already leaning toward them beating the Eagles next week because that's what we don't expect. Like, you lose at home to the Panthers, you beat the Eagles at home. Like, that's kind of how this team is. But then I look at the NFC, and I think this is just a wild conference, man. Like, there's three just bad teams in this conference: the Saints, the Giants, the Cardinals. I think there's like four teams that aren't bad but aren't good either. Like, they can beat you anytime, but they can lose anytime. The Commanders, the Falcons, Cowboys, Vikings. I'd even throw five. The Panthers in there. I mean, the Panthers get blown out at home against the Bills last week. They win in Lambeau Field this week. They're just, you know, I don't know what to make of the Bears. And then you have like seven teams that are bona fide contenders: the Eagles, the Bucks, the Rams, the Packers, the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Lions. Any of those teams can go to the Super Bowl out of this conference. Any of those teams can get hot at the right time. They're all the same to me. It could be the Packers. It could be someone else. We're not really going to know until like the middle of December. And one of those teams is going to get hot, and that's going to be the team that wins this conference this season. I don't know who that's going to be, but there's like seven teams that it could be. Like, this, it's a wide-open conference.
It's a weird team. That's the best way to put it. My question is, you say it could be rhetorical. They always say you're getting better or worse. This is week 9. Is this team improved and played better compared to week 1 against Detroit? That's a question I'm curious about. I don't know.
Here's where I'm at. I'm curious what you think, Spoon. I think it's easy right now to say, well, week 1, they blitzed. They beat up on the Detroit Lions, and now they just lost to the Panthers. They've clearly regressed. But it reminds me of almost like the inverse of when Xavier McKinney told me, hey, when the run defense looked really, really good, there were little things that get skimmed over because you're not giving up a lot of yards there and you're winning games, right? So those problems are getting kind of buried because of the good. Like, I think that there's still a ton of potential here. Mm-hmm. I believe in this team's talent. I have no idea if that's all going to come together or not. But my belief in the talent has not – I don't think the talent's regressed.
No.
They lost a bad loss today. But I don't think just because that happened, they could come out next week and beat the Eagles. And then I don't think that it's necessarily true that they have regressed. Mm-hmm. It's just they have yet to figure it out. And that's the thing. I don't know if they will or not. That's what this season will come down to. By mid-December, do they have it consistently figured out? Because at their best, they can beat anybody.
Yeah. It's, I guess, the reason why I do even, like, that question even ponders in my head. Because, like I said, it's week 9, and they're still having procedural issues for penalties. Like, how are you getting, illegal formations on kickoff at this point in the mm-hmm. season? Mm-hmm. And all the pre-snaps and just missed assignments. And, like you said, offensive linemen still not knowing, okay, I thought you had this guy. It's just so many of those little things that I didn't think I would see it as frequent at this point in November. Granted, it is the beginning of November, but that's going to be something I'm watching with this team. Like you said, if they beat the Eagles and play well doing it, wouldn't be surprised. But at the end of the day, can this team start to string together some wins? Because even last year, with the ups and downs, Jordan Love's hurt, they had turnovers. They had a stretch last year where they were playing good football around this time. You know, they beat the Dolphins, they beat the Saints, they beat the 49ers, and they had, you know, had a close game with Detroit. So even last year, they pieced together some good games late in the season. So we'll see what happens moving forward with this group. So,
what do you think, Spoon?
Go ahead.
What's your answer to that?
Is whether they're getting better or worse.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a clear path of like they definitely regressed or what do you make of that?
I think it's, you know, you said that you're either getting better or getting worse, but I just think they've kind of been the same.
Yeah.
I think they got the huge boost from Micah Parsons the first two games. And that they're really lucky that those two games were scheduled. You know, were when they were, because the Parsons boost was huge. Mm-hmm. And now they're sort of, you know, leveling. Micah Parsons can't do it all. You know, hey, he didn't have a sack today. You know, he didn't have many pressures. And, you know, someone else has to, you know, stand up and make a play when he's not. So I just kind of feel like they've just been kind of driftwood right now. And I don't know if they're going to, you know, catch a wave or if they're just going to continue to drift. You're right. They could beat the Eagles, and then they could wind up losing to the Giants.
Yep.
You know, 100%. It just seems like that's kind of who they are right now. Yeah. What you would want to see is that, you know, if they had lost today, or, you know, if you're going to lose today, you know, you made all kinds of really big plays, but Carolina just outperformed you. You know, they just beat you. You know, they had a better day. And on this, you know, here, I just, Carolina did have a better day, but I don't feel like the Packers, you know, pushed the issue much at all.
I'm sure you heard the same thing over and over in that locker room. Same thing being said. We beat ourselves today. And that's totally true. And that's not a moral victory. It's not a good thing that you beat yourself. It's not like, hey, we still have all this talent. We just beat ourselves. No, that's bad.
Yeah,
you have to stop beating yourself.
At some point, you go. They were better than us. Like you wouldn't say that we beat ourselves when the loss to Philadelphia in the playoffs.
Right.
Philadelphia was a better team. They kicked their ass.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, that's what you want to say.
Yeah.
And if that's what happened, that's what happened. But yeah, I don't think we can say that. You know, that's been the case. They can't say it about Cleveland. That Cleveland just, you know, kicked their butt up and down the field. Yeah. No. So,
yeah. So that is the make of the team. That was a lot to unpack here in this podcast. And that pretty much sums up how this season has been. And even still, 5-2-1.
You know what, though? From our seat, and I know it's a lot different if you're a fan. All you care about if you're a fan, you just want to go 17-0. That's all you care about.
The fans.
This is a fascinating team, man.
Well, you either want to go 17-0 or you want to fire LaFleur.
Yeah.
Or Budakunst.
Oh, no, you go 17-0, you still want to fire Matt LaFleur if you're a fan.
I'm like,
this is a fascinating team. I have no idea where this season's going.
It is, and that is the name of the game. So as long as we're not getting fired, that's cool with me.
Yeah, employment beats unemployment.
I'm trying.
That's right. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to the Green 19 podcast. And next week, it's Monday Night Football. It's Packers-Eagles, and we'll talk more about that later in the week. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.